You're about to hear the Sunday sermon from the Grapevine Church of Christ in Grapevine, Texas, a family who's devoted to giving our lives to and living our lives for Jesus Christ. If you have any questions about today's lesson, visit us on our website, www.grapevinechurch.com. Thanks for listening.
By the way, I wanted to let you know, we're streaming live right now. It's on our website, but it's also on Facebook. We're streaming live to Facebook each and every Sunday. So if you have family or friends you know don't go to church, as soon as it begins, it pops up, just share it with your friends that you know are at home. Share it with family that may not be here. Let them participate online as well. Okay, so I want to begin today by acknowledging something. I know we've heard a lot of sermons on this topic today of loving our neighbor. And I'll be honest, you're probably going to hear a whole lot more before it's over with. Maybe from me. But you've heard the command to love your neighbor. You've heard the command of follow the golden rule. You've heard how to be a good Samaritan. You know, we've talked about that. We've relegated it in some ways, I think, this type of sermon to the already doing category of our life. So as we begin today, I want you to resist the temptation to check out, or even to check your Facebook status, or even scan your email, because you already know what I'm about to say. I've done that before. I've heard this. I'm going to pay attention half-heartedly. Now, loving your neighbor is what most of us think we know how to do really well, and what I've come to find out, in many ways, we think we're doing it. As Shelley puts it, we were talking about this week. She says, well, Scott, I'm not loving my neighbor. It's just maybe, sometimes we may not actually be loving our neighbor. So today I want to look at this just a little bit differently. We're not going to be talking about just being nice. We're not going to be talking about, caring for somebody who's beaten up and left for dead on the side of the road either. And those are both great things to do. We're not going to talk about big picture ideas. What I wanted to do is to bring this down to a practical level so that we'll be able to put first things first, and we might be able to put into practice a concept that goes back thousands and thousands of years. And it points back to really who God is at the very core of his being. So we've been talking about the last couple of weeks about how to begin our year by being fully present. And if you remember, we've talked about paying attention. We've talked about why we do what we do and what our priority should be. Now, not priorities, plural, remember, but priority, singular. See, priorities used to be a word that only meant one thing. It was priority for several hundred years from its inception until the 1900s, and we changed it to priorities. So what is your one priority? We talked about how often we put a little bit of our attention into several different areas, and as a result, nothing really takes precedence, and we make a little bit of impact in a lot of different areas. Whereas, if we determined what the priority was in our life, what we were going to use our attention and pay our attention to, if we use this priority to act as a filter by which we love and live and learn and lead, then we can make much more of an impact. And we'd be able to see just how far we can move within that vision and purpose. So where we give our attention shows our motivation. This is our why that moves us. So we could say that our why is also our heart's desire. It's our heart's compulsion. There's a theologian named James Smith, and he has a book entitled You Are What You Love, and I'm making my way through it. But what he says is we are what we love, and the reason that is true is because we live toward what we want. We don't really live toward what we don't want. We live toward what we want. And if you don't believe that's true, look in the scriptures at how many times Jesus doesn't, he asks somebody, hey, what do you want? He doesn't ask, hey, how much do you know? What do you know? He says, what do you want? On several times. Our wants determine our attention, where we focus our attention. And our why is developed, created, and nurtured by what we love. Now, what if our why was this first and greatest commandment, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength? Why do you do what you do? Because I love the Lord my God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. Now, we just read it a little earlier. Matthew 22, people approach Jesus, and I want you to look at Jesus' response one more time to these people that said, what's the greatest commandment? If you remember, he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And then he says, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Now, the rabbis during this time, they were the thought leaders of the day. They would determine what was or was not religiously appropriate for you to do. And that still happens, by the way, even today. People, as I told you this a while back, in the store in Israel, someone's on the phone with something. Hey, is this kosher? Is this kosher enough for me? And there's a big long line behind them because they still consult their rabbis to determine what's appropriate or what's not appropriate. Today, if our preacher doesn't determine that something's appropriate, we just, you know, go somewhere else, right? But to them, these rabbis, they didn't all agree on the second most important commandment. They usually all agreed on the first, but the second one was the point of contention. So some actually thought the most important commandment apart, second to that, was to not use the name of the Lord thy God in vain. In fact, even today, you will see lots of Jewish websites and materials and documents that's printed. It will say G-D. You just do not say God or even type it out. G-D. And so, to some, that's still the second most important commandment. To some, it's the Sabbath. You know, you have got to make sure that the Sabbath is holy. Whatever else you do, Sabbath must be holy. And that, if you notice, read Scripture and you'll see how many times people were anxious about any time Jesus and his apostles even hinted at doing something inappropriate on the Sabbath. That was a huge point of contention. So Jesus, though, specifically and without any hesitation says, oh, this is the second commandment. Now, this is not a new thought. There was another rabbi named Hillel, and he was a pretty significant influence of the day. He believed this as well. So very quickly, he says, the second greatest command, love your neighbor as yourself. And it's a very old command. This is not new. He goes back to Leviticus 19. So yes, we're going to go to Leviticus. Turn to Leviticus chapter 19. Someone asks you, what did you learn today? Just say, we studied Leviticus. You don't really get a chance to study a lot of Leviticus these days in church, but we're doing it today. God, in this particular passage, Leviticus 19, is giving us a hint at what he finds most important. We'll see that hopefully God has always had a heart for us. He's always had a heart for the neighbor, for those people. He wants us to have a heart for them too, but not a simply a heart that's nice or sympathetic. We're talking about a genuine heart that is compassionate, concerned, and attentive to others. So let's go ahead and begin reading in verse 9. It's 9 through 18, a significant chunk here. This is in the middle of what he's talking about, but he starts this particular section. He says, when you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God. Do not steal. Do not lie. Do not deceive one another. Do not swear falsely by my name and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. Do not defraud or rob your neighbor. Do not hold back the wages of a hired worker overnight. Don't curse the deaf or put a stumbling block in front of the blind, but fear your God. I am the Lord. Do not pervert justice. Do not show partiality to the poor or favoritism to the great, but judge your neighbor fairly. Do not go about spreading slander among your people. Do not do anything that endangers your neighbor's life. I am the Lord. And do not hate a fellow Israelite in your heart. Rebuke your neighbor frankly so you will not share in their guilt. Do not seek revenge, or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Now, everything in this practice, in this passage, is a practice that, when enacted, forced these people into paying attention to others. Now, in that day, for the average Hebrew family who was agrarian, most of them were, the harvest was the culmination of an entire season's worth of work. And determining how much harvest you got was really determining the health of your family, the health of your finances. I mean, it determined whether or not you were going to eat, not eat, be poor, or be wealthy. Or in some ways, just make it to the next day. So if you were worried, you would make sure, very sure, that you didn't miss anything. So you would go over your fields twice, sometimes even three times, to make sure you did not leave anything. And then God comes in and he says, no, I don't want you to do that anymore. I want you to just do it once, do it well, do it once, but leave the rest. It's kind of foreign to them a little bit. I mean, this was first about realizing that there were others in their community that didn't have vineyards. I mean, at the very basic level, and there's, you know, or even people in their community who didn't even have a normal place to live. Because not everyone's like them, you know. There were people who were wanderers, people who were outcasts. There were even a lot of people who just made poor choices and they really didn't have a place to stay. So God's saying, hey, I don't want you to look at them and go, too bad. If you had worked harder, you might be able to eat. God's telling them, listen, there's lots of different types of people here. So I'm going to feed them and take care of them on your leftovers. I can do that. I'm God. He's reminding these people, the hearer, us today, that sometimes, you know, we can put our own needs and wants above our social responsibility to act morally, to act justly. And God's telling these people, and even us today, hey, let's start at the very basic level. Don't lie. Don't do it. Don't be deceptive. Don't swear falsely or profane the name of God. And then you ask, how can this be loving our neighbor? This is just keeping a commandment. Well, think about it. To love your neighbor is to ensure that they see God as best as we can show them. But if we, who are supposed to love and honor and follow God in heaven, are also swearing by his name, using his name in vain, swearing with his name, then how in the world are they going to see the one true God who offers them life? All they're going to do is they're going to see our actions and they're going to dismiss us and they're going to dismiss him easily. So loving your neighbor is actually knowing, you know, if my life doesn't reflect my God, they're never going to meet God. And those neighbors that I am supposed to love are never going to have eternal life or even a hint of life. There's far-reaching consequences here. It's still happening today. People are judging you by your faith, the way you walk, the way you talk, the way you work, the way you study, the way you order coffee. Did you know they're actually even judging you and your faith by the way you drive? How many of you have a Jesus? Don't tell me. If you have a Jesus fish on your car, people are judging you and your faith by the way you drive your car. So here's a simple practice for all of us, okay? All of us. Don't drive selfishly or angrily or reactively. Very simple for some of us. Don't do that. Drive instead generously. If someone is trying to get around you, let them get around you. I know, I see people are looking at their watches. They're uncomfortable. It's okay. It's okay, let them get around you. It's okay. If someone's on your tail and, you know, you're in the fast lane going 85, and you shouldn't be doing that anyway, but they're on your tail, and instead of slamming on your brakes, let them go around you. It's okay. But what I'm telling you is that showing others your faith in every situation matters. It matters, even when you're in your car. So if you're one of these people who has a hard time with it, just take the Jesus fish off your car. Start there. This is why I don't have one on mine. Now today, I know it's funny, but there is something very serious about this. It's become a joke in a lot of ways. You see it in movies where there's you know, the front end of a car is slammed and the Jesus fish is on the back of the car. People look at that. It's kind of funny. Or somebody said, honk if you love Jesus, and this really happened. And I honked at them, and they showed me something I did not want to see. So think about it. Today, we don't have vineyards. A lot of us don't really have vineyards. We don't typically take advantage of the poor. We don't curse the deaf, usually. We don't put a stumbling block in front of the blind. By the way, there's a very long lots of people arguing about this particular passage. It's kind of comical, but we don't typically do that. We don't hate our fellow brother unless they make us mad or talk behind our back. But even still, we ask forgiveness. A lot of us, we do that. We say, you know, I shouldn't do that. I have a hard time with that person. I don't want to hate. I don't really hate them. We try to wrestle with that. I get it. But every one of these little to-dos in this passage in Leviticus is another way for us to love our neighbor. But on a deeper level, it reminds us that we actually have a neighbor to begin with. I think this is where many of us struggle, right here. We don't struggle with the big picture questions. I think that in our day and age, our struggle is actually noticing the neighbors we need to be loving. Our houses are getting bigger, our yards are getting smaller, our fences are getting higher, our cars are getting bigger, our glasses are getting more tinted. We could technically go through our life without actually having to really interact with anyone if we think about it. All of this begins by actually knowing who your neighbor is. So Shelly, let me tell the story. She was in college, she was a freshman, and she got to, I won't mess the story up, but she got to have the center room. It was the bigger room of her hall. And so she got to meet her neighbors, her next door neighbors, people that were two, three doors down. When they would have a little hall party, it would be in her room, and all the girls would, you know, hang out and talk and do whatever they do, I don't know. But what was funny is there was one girl who had a problem remembering Shelly. I mean, she lived a few doors down from her, and every time she saw Shelly, it was just like she did not remember her. And she would, introduce herself to her. And this happened several times over a period of about a month, and it kind of became a little joke between, you know, those girls. But there was one moment whenever she had had enough, and she came across the girl, and she introduced herself again. And she says, yeah, actually, we've met a few times already. You've already introduced yourself to me around four times. And the girl said, oh, yeah, it's the new, it's so many, you know, so many people to meet. It's the beginning of school. And Shelly said, yeah, but I live two doors down from you. You've been in my room several times. We've actually had conversations before. I mean, have y'all, has that happened to you before? Well, it happened to me and her too when we went to this church a while back when we first got married, and one of the elders comes up to me and says, hey, are you visiting? And I said, actually, no, we've been going here almost about a year. Now, I get it. In a big church like this, 300, 350 people, there's a lot of people who are here. Some of you guys don't ever go across the line unless you have to leave, right? I get it. It's only a couple of elders, lots of people who aren't here every Sunday. I get it. But on this particular occasion, it kind of irritated me. And so he's talking to me. He goes, oh, you remember? I said, yeah, I've actually done a few things on stage. I've said prayers. I've done some dramas. I did a one-man thing, if you remember. And he's like, oh, well. And I said, yeah, and we've actually talked before. And what is interesting is that this church was 75 people. Now, I don't say this to make fun. I really don't. It is funny, but I don't say it to make fun. what I think it illustrates is that sometimes we don't pay attention to the people who were right in front of us. Sometimes we're so self-consumed, we're taking care of ourselves, making sure that we have what we need and what we want, that we don't notice the people right in front of us. Now, there's something, there's a phenomenon, and it's called change blindness. How many of you have heard of this? Okay, good, this will be fun. There's lots of different videos I could have showed, but I showed a very basic one. So go ahead and show this real quick. That's about 80% of the world has this change blindness. Whenever things change in front of us, whether it's the movies, whether it's, I don't know, you see movies where they're drinking something and then they cut back to them and it's empty, cut back again and it's full. You know, you've seen those. Is it on? Okay, here we go. See, I just watched this right here. So we're going to see if this person notices anything. See if y'all notice. Mick and I, she's talking to her. She's trying to interact with her. And there's some eye contact at the end. Just a little bit, but not much. Okay, so how many of you noticed? Did y'all notice what was going on there? I mean, honestly, some people have seen this and they didn't notice. Okay, there's lots of these different types of videos. These are some Harvard students who had made a video about this. And what it's called change blindness. And the experiment was, if the person you were talking to changed right in front of you, would you be able to notice? Now, they do these things with a door. These people are asking directions, and they're saying, hey, could you help me? I need to know where this is. And then a door, somebody carrying a door, construction workers, come right in between them. And this person moves with the door, and a totally different person comes in and just, you know, looks at them, and they have no idea. It even happened in one situation where they're taking a picture of somebody. Could take a picture of me. Showed them how to do the video. They're really close together, and then they go over there, and he does this. The door comes in the middle. A totally different person comes in and does this, and the people do not notice. It's comical, but it's funny, and it's scary that sometimes we don't notice the people right in front of us. I thought it would be funny to have a box out here and say, let me get something, and then Russell would come out and see if y'all would notice the difference. Some people think we look alike. What I find most fascinating about this is that this happens when we think we're paying attention. But remember, attention is at the heart of loving our neighbor. Because our why determines what we focus on, what we attend to, where we place our attention. I've seen so many of these experiments this week. And one similar thread is that many of these behind-the-counter switcheroos that you see, the customers are more concerned with what they're doing or more concerned with the T-shirt they're about to get than with the person who is helping them fill out the form or getting their T-shirt. The person is more concerned with what they're getting than with the person right in front of them. And I want you to hear this. We cannot love our neighbor if we don't notice our neighbor. We cannot love our neighbor if we don't notice our neighbor. And so the question I have for myself, I'm guilty. Do you notice? And if you could think of one person in your life that needed to be noticed, needed the love of God that you have, needed the hope that's in you, if you could think of one person, who would that be? I mean, think of your daily routine, the places you frequent, the coffee shop, the donut shop, your favorite lunch place, the floors in your office building, you know, your gas station. Can you picture the faces at each interaction? Bring it closer to home. What about your coworker, the person two cubicles over? What about the person who sits at the next table at lunch, or the kid who sits at the next table at lunch, or the one who sits next to you in science class, or maybe two behind you in class? You know who they are? Can you picture their faces? You know their names? What about your actual neighbors? We're not very good at that. I feel really bad. Our whole neighborhood brought us cookies when we moved in 2.5 years ago, and I really wanted to do it at Christmas. I didn't do it. What about here, each Sunday and Wednesday? Do we know the names of the people who sit across the aisle from you? Next to you, around you, behind you? What about, do you people know the people over here? And do you know the people? I'm just going to introduce you now. This is the people over here, and these are the people over here. It's funny, though. Sometimes we don't know. And I've heard this. Oh, they sit on the other side. Do you know so-and-so? Oh, they sit on the other side. But these are people, I think you get what I'm talking about. These are people with hopes and dreams and joys just like you. These are people who have sorrows, they have stories. These are neighbors that you encounter each and every day. Possibilities to bless, possibilities to love, possibilities to show that God is still in control. No transfer of power has happened. God is still in control. You could tell them that. You could show them that. Are we looking for ways to reach these people? So listen to this right here also. It's very easy to miss something that we aren't looking for. It's very easy to miss something if we aren't looking for it. So here's a practice for you. When you come across the people in these places, put your phone down and just very simply look them in the eye. That's it. You can be nice too. You can have a smile. You can even tell them, I hope that you find joy today. God bless you. I know for some of us, words are difficult. So how hard is it just to make eye contact with somebody, even if it's a little uncomfortable? And I know this is very basic, so I'm going to go one step further. Why not begin to look for one person to show that love to, and to show attention? One person who needs attention. Someone who you may or may not know very well. Maybe somebody you feel needs to know about God's love. So let's begin right here. Now, everyone has this card with you, okay? Everyone has this card right here. So today, I want you to take a moment. We're going to sing here in a second. And I want you to take this moment. Don't waste it, please. I want you to take it, and I want you to think of one person. I want you to write the first name down on it. Just the first one. I don't want to know their whole name. You know what it is. Some of you may not. Some of you may just know the first name. I want you to take it, and I want you to write their name down on this card. Someone you can't come into contact with on a regular basis. I want you to write it down. I want you to remember it. Pray that God will lead you to this person this week. And I want you to pass those to the middle. And as we sing, after we sing, we're going to have some people pick those cards up. I want to display them on our display racks out here so that you can see that there are a lot more people that need to be reached that come here every Sunday. Imagine if we all had one person to show attention to. Imagine what could God do with a disciple who's paying attention. Amen. What could God do with you if you paid attention to one person? This was your one focus this week, next week. It may, for some of us, even take a year. It doesn't matter if they believe differently than you do or even voted for somebody differently than you do. What if this is the one person that you need to be loving? I'm encouraging you, as we stand and sing here in a second, to fill this out. Pass it to the aisle. and let's see what God can do with a disciple who is focused on loving their neighbor. I'm going to pray here in a second. We're going to commit this to God, that he helps us. I'm very passionate about this because I've even seen people who have grown up in the church who are walking away because they have not received or experienced love. I've seen people who will not step foot inside of a church because all they've seen is the opposite. Now, granted, none of us are perfect, and I know some people feel that way maybe because of what I've done, but we have an opportunity now to let God do something through us and make things right. And I believe in you. I believe in you.
You've been listening to Grapevine Church of Christ. Subscribe to the Sermon Podcast and to our other Grapevine Church podcast to hear special behind-the-scenes content. For more information, visit our website, www.grapevinechurch.com.